They will regulate a militia being necessary to the security of a free state. The right of the people to keep and bear arms shall not be infringed. Welcome to another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam and Company. My name is Cam Edwards. Glad you are with me on the program today. Hopefully you had a great weekend. It was not bad here in Central Virginia. A little hot. I did not have a chance to go do some shooting. I was actually hoping to get to an air-conditioned range on Saturday, but just too much to do around the house. So I will be up in Northern Virginia this weekend and might be able to swing by. In fact, I'll be at the NRA building this weekend, so maybe I'll have time to sneak down to the NRA range. I don't know that I will, but I'm going to try. Going to do my best. Join us on the program today, Mr. Mark Walters, host of Armed American Radio. We've got a lot to talk about, including a victory in the Ninth Circuit, like a final victory in the Ninth Circuit, which is something we've not been able to talk about before. We've talked about good decisions coming out of the district court level. We've talked plenty about good decisions, even from three-judge panels on the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals. But those decisions have always been undone by an en banc panel on the Ninth Circuit. And that's typically what happens, right? So you get that good decision. And I'm just going to use California as an example because that's where most of the federal legislature litigation is coming out of. Although Washington State is providing a healthy number of cases, as is Hawaii. And we do have the Oregon Measure 114 case that is still going on as well. But for the most part, I think the bulk of the 2A cases are coming out of California, which is no surprise, given the vociferous appetite for gun control that the state legislature has in Sacramento. And again, you know, typically you'll get a good decision, not always by Judge Roger Benitez, but oftentimes, and in this case, it was a Benitez decision. Attorney General Rob Bonta appeals that decision up to the Ninth Circuit. You get a three-judge panel. And, you know, I wouldn't even say it's like 50-50, but the Ninth Circuit is more balanced than it was a couple of years ago. President Donald Trump, in his first term, appointed a number of justices, and at one point there was actually parity on the Ninth Circuit between Democrat-appointed judges and Republican-appointed judges. That is not the case anymore. But there is still enough Second Amendment supporters, at least jurists that understand we are talking about a real fundamental right here, that you can get good decisions, including sometimes even unanimous decisions, but 2-1 decisions in favor of these plaintiffs who are fighting to overturn these California gun laws, not uncommon, not unheard of. And when that happens, Attorney General Rob Bonta inevitably appeals en banc. The Ninth Circuit is so big that, you know, in other appellate courts, when you take a case en banc, it's every member of the appellate court sits in and weighs in. Can't do that with the Ninth Circuit. So you get about, again, I think there are 27 judges on the Ninth Circuit, maybe less than that. But anyway, you get about 14. And so it's kind of a roll of the dice as to, you know, who are going to hear these cases. In this particular case, we're talking about an en banc panel decided, nah, we're not going to take up this appeal, which allows the three-judge panel's decision to stand. Forces Attorney General Rob Bonta to take his appeal to the Supreme Court if he decides to do so. And in the meantime, a California gun control law has been struck down. That's where we start our conversation with Mark Walters from Armed American Radio. Take a look and a listen. Mark, thank you so much for coming to the program. It's good to have you here on another Monday.
Always a pleasure. Mondays with Mark. I love it. How are you this morning, Cam?
I am good. I appreciate that. Yeah, no 95 degree days here in Central Virginia, mid 80s. I'll take it. And we've got a lot to talk about. We're going to actually go hit both coasts during the course of this interview. We're going to start out on the West Coast because some interesting news and good news. After what, 50 some odd lawsuits, the Ninth Circuit has finally found a California gun law that goes too far, right? Yeah. We've seen good decisions come from the district court. We've seen good decisions come from these three-judge panels on the Ninth Circuit. But inevitably, those decisions get appealed en banc. An en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit says, oh, no, this is fine, right? Bans on magazines, fine. Bans on so-called assaults, fine. Waiting periods, fine. But the gun rationing law in California that limits people to one handgun in every 30 days, an en banc panel of the Ninth Circuit, well, the Ninth Circuit declined to take up an en banc appeal, right? Right. So the decision from the three-judge panel will stand, and the three-judge panel said this violates the Constitution. A district court judge, I believe, said this violates the Constitution. As of right now, I guess, Mark, California's 1-in-30 law is no more, although there are lawmakers that are now trying to impose a 3-in-30 gun rationing law just so that they can tell you what to do, right? Just so they can tell gun owners, we get to decide how you exercise your right to keep and bear arms.
Funny that you mentioned that, because I was unaware of the 3. Now, having said that, and excuse me, I'm feeling a little bit under the weather, so I'll do the best I can. Having said that, last night on the program on Armed American Radio, I was talking with Gottlieb about this at length.
Mm-hmm.
This is a historic victory out of the Ninth Circuit. Let me make that very clear. Historic for the reasons you just laid out. Okay, that never happens in California. One of the key questions that came up in discussion yesterday on my program was, okay, what are they going to do now? Newsom doesn't like to be beat when it comes to gun rights. But remember, he supports our gun rights. You know, he was just gifted a gun. He had to leave it back there because he couldn't get through his own myriad of laws to take possession of it. But nonetheless, he supports the Second Amendment, right? He made that very clear. I'm kidding with you folks. We all know the truth. He doesn't. And the conversation arose last night. What are they going to do to get around it? And now I just heard this from you. It's the first I've heard from about this, and then I'm hearing it from you for the first time. I am not shocked by that at all. It came up in discussion yesterday. What is it, 3 now they're talking about?
Yeah. 3-in-30 days. So, well,
okay. Let's put this in a nutshell. The reason the Ninth Circuit ruled the way they ruled is because this was egregiously unconstitutional to tell a human being how many guns they can buy in the United States. It was patently unconstitutional to begin with, and we know that. Making it 3 or even 6 or 10 is not going to change the game at all. And I think the Ninth Circuit might have an issue with that as well.
I think so. The rationale was that the 1-in-30 law imposed a substantial burden on the right to keep and bear arms, right? And so I guess California is now trying to say, all right, well, where's that limit where it's not a substantial burden, right? If it's not 3, then maybe it's 5 every 30 days. But again, this comes back to control, right? They want to be the ones to decide this is how many guns you get to buy every month. And frankly, it doesn't matter if it's 3, 5, 10, 20, or maybe one a day, right? Maybe it's 30-in-30. I don't care. The government doesn't get to decide how many firearms I get to purchase. My bank account gets to decide how many guns I get to purchase in a 30-day period, right? That's it. The government has no compelling interest in limiting the number of firearms. And Mr. Mario the Rooster here agrees with me vociferously. Again, the government has no interest in deciding how many guns I get to purchase, how many guns I get to own. And if the government can decide how many guns I get to purchase in a 30-day period, does the government get to decide how many guns you get to own or I get to own?
Well, that would be the natural outgrowth of that, yes. Because if California were successful in determining how many guns you can purchase per month, they could also be successful in determining how many guns you can purchase, period. At what point does the government say, you have enough guns? Now, you and I both know the old adage, right? How many more guns do you really need? Just one more. Right. How many more guitars do I need? My wife asks me that all the time. Just the other one. Just the next one. Just like guns, you know, each guitar plays differently. It sounds differently. It acts differently. Just like guns, each one is different. We have different calibers. There's, you know, this isn't going to fly. And I think the Ninth Circuit will take issue with this as well as a slap in the face, because the ruling was pretty firm. And again, that's what part of what made it so historic. I was thrilled to see the ruling out of the Ninth Circuit. But I don't know. These are things that when it comes to California, we've been watching this game played for years and years and years. Usually the routine is, as you laid out, we see a ruling, we get it. We get a 3-judge panel, we win it. Then we get an en banc panel and we lose it. And this goes on and on and on and on and on. In this case, we didn't. And it's a wake-up call. So it's only natural that California is going to try some legislative trick, but it's going to fall flat. Unfortunately, Cam, for those living in California, their tax dollars and their time and money are going to be wasted for another 2-year process as they continue to jerk around with the rights of California citizens.
Absolutely. And you're right. I mean, we'll see what Attorney General Rob Bonta does if this case gets appealed to the Supreme Court or if Bonta just takes the loss. I suspect we'll see an appeal. And I suspect the Supreme Court won't grant cert to that case.
Agreed.
Now, one of the other cases where the Ninth Circuit did uphold a California gun law, Duncan versus Bonta, right? This is the case that has been going on, I think, for like 7 or 8 years. I mean, it predates Bruin. It was one of the cases, I believe, that was GVR'd after Bruin, sent back down all the way to the courtroom of Judge Roger St. Benitez, who now twice has said, yes, this ban on large capacity magazines violates the Second Amendment. I believe it was an en banc panel. I think the three judge panel included Judge Lawrence Van Dyke. They affirmed Benitez's decision, but an en banc panel overturned that, saying that the magazines are not arms. They're not protected by the Second Amendment at all. So the cert petition has now been filed in that case. And so this is going to be pending before the Supreme Court. They're going to get a chance to consider this in conference. There's also another case out of the state of Washington, Gators Custom Guns, dealing with the Washington State's magazine ban. So that's going to be a couple of cases dealing with mag bans going before the Supreme Court. And unlike that case out of Rhode Island we talked about last year that was relisted time and time again and then ultimately denied along with Snope, these are cases that have been fully briefed. They've been decided on the merits. Like that's it, right? This is not a request for a preliminary injunction. This is not some sort of emergency appeal. This is it. And this is a prime opportunity for the court to take up the issue of A, whether or not magazines are protected by the Second Amendment. And I think clearly they are. But also, again, can the state impose these sort of artificial limits on the capacity of a firearm? When you look back in history, Mark, that didn't take place in 1791, even though multi-shot firearms were in existence. That didn't take place in 1868 when the 14th Amendment was ratified. It wasn't until like the 1980s or 90s that you started seeing these magazine bans put in place. Back in the 1800s, I mean, Henry rifles, load on Sunday, shoot all week, right? That was their motto.
That was the famous motto. That's right.
And nobody was trying to say, well, that's too many rounds for a rifle, right? Henry has to be limited to 5 rounds before you have to reload. So I'm curious to get your take on whether or not you think the Supreme Court is going to take this case. And then again, just how egregious California's law is, because it doesn't just ban the sale of these magazines. They went back and they actually banned the possession of previously grandfathered magazines. So people who had been legal owners for decades were now told, hey, you got to hand them in. You got to get rid of them. But you cannot keep this magazine that you've had since, you know, the 1990s, because if you do, you're going to be a criminal.
Yeah, well, they'll try to make a criminal. You talk about the Henry real quick as you're talking about that. I imagine how Custer felt about the Henry rifle, right? Maybe he felt there were too many rounds in it. Maybe he felt he didn't have enough available in him. Yeah, it's fascinating to talk about, because I believe in the current makeup of the SCOTUS as we have it now, we will find that magazine bans and magazine capacity limits and stuff will be found to be unconstitutional, because they are a part of the functioning of the firearm itself. And then that gets us into, well, if it's required to fire the firearm, we get into a quantitative number. Where's enough? That, you know, you go back and look at what the Ninth Circuit just did. How can they tell you how many rounds they can have, right?
Right.
This is nothing but modern gun control zealots coming at us in every way they can, getting creative, just like they're going to do in California to get around the one gun a month ban, this whole nine yards. But I think you and I talked about this last week. What's interesting to me about the magazine case is seeking cert. We got Washington and we have the Bonta case. Is I go back to my conversation with constitutional attorney Mark Smith at the GOA, who says he doesn't believe the Supreme Court is going to take one of these magazine cases up and grant cert until they answer the question of the quote unquote, and I put it in quotes, air quotes, assault weapons bans, because they don't want to tackle the magazine issue until they tackle the gun itself. And if you go back and look at what Kavanaugh wrote in his statement when they refused, as you and I discussed many, many times over the last couple of years, the Fourth Circuit case that they should have taken. For whatever reason, they did not. But Kavanaugh put that little caveat down there when he wrote, he says, the court's going to take one of these cases, I presume, within the next two sessions. Now, Smith seems to believe they're probably going to take one in the next coming session. But his belief is, and I agree with him, I hadn't looked at it this way, but why would they take the magazine case, grant cert, before they take the actual gun case itself? So I think you're going to see them. Maybe there's a combination there somehow. I don't know.
Well, there is.
So they combine two cases, maybe. The Supreme Court certainly could do that.
Well, so the Illinois cases, you know, the Illinois Protect Illinois Communities Act banned,
right?
You know, not just the gun, but magazines too, right? So that would be a vehicle where you could challenge where we are challenging both a gun ban and a magazine ban. And it should get to the Supreme Court, probably not this term, but maybe next term. Oral arguments in the Seventh Circuit, I think, are coming in September. You know, and the appellate courts, I mean, they don't have a deadline to issue their opinion, so they can sit on this for as long as they wanted. We saw, you know, the Fourth Circuit sit on Snope for more than a year. So there's no telling when we're going to get that decision kicked up to the Supreme Court. But that would be a vehicle where you could address both a gun and magazine ban at the same time. I think it's interesting because, you know, I see Mark's point. If I were an attorney arguing to the Supreme Court to take a magazine ban case, I would say, listen, you know, these magazine bans impact not just, you know, semi-automatic rifles. They impact, you know, a wide variety of handguns that generally come sold with magazines that can hold more than 10 rounds. Right. I mean, that's the standard for things like Glock, the most popular pistol in the country. So I think that you can separate out those two. But I it is interesting. I mean, and obviously we've seen the court hesitant to take up a gun ban case. So maybe they are waiting for a combination of the two. I don't know. But
we never know what the Supreme Court's going to do, unfortunately. And I it would be nice to be a fly on the wall in some of these conferences. Wouldn't that be fascinating?
Oh, my God.
To see and understand and get into the mindset of how the court makes the decisions that they make. And of all the cases we've looked at over the years, I would have loved to have been the fly on the wall of that Fourth Circuit case when they denied cert, and that, because that was that to me was a slap gimme. You know, it just checked all the boxes, and I was very, very shocked when they didn't take that case.
Yeah,
but I think that there's a rationale to it. Something interesting Mark also said was when I mentioned to him that I agreed with his take on that. I hadn't really thought about it in that perspective, but he was also talking about when I mentioned that we know Thomas wants to write one of these decisions, wants to write this AWB decision, assault weapons ban decision, badly. He said, don't be surprised if Kavanaugh writes it. And he went back and alluded to the statement that he made previously. Kavanaugh has a history of making predictions like this in previous decisions. So don't be shocked. It's going to be fun to watch this one play out. It really, truly is. I just hate that it hasn't been done yet because we want this. We need this resolved. Last year, 10 years ago, this should not be dragging on the way it is.
Yeah, absolutely. And Kavanaugh, you know, he when he was on the D.C. Circuit Court of Appeals, he was in the dissenting minority in a challenge to D.C.'s ban on so-called assault weapons. He said, yeah, this is unconstitutional. So I think we know where Brett Kavanaugh stands. And frankly, I don't care if it's Alito. I don't care if it's Thomas. I don't care if it's Kavanaugh. As long as we get a good decision, it can be Judge Ketanji Jackson. I don't care. You know, as long as it's a good decision.
And a W we'll see, is a W, baby.
Right.
That's the way it is.
All right. So I'm going to clunkily transition from the West Coast to the East Coast here. One of the other lawsuits that is ongoing in the Ninth Circuit is CRP versus LASD, which, among other things, challenges the extraordinary long wait times to get a concealed carry permit in Los Angeles. It is over a year to simply get an appointment to submit your application for a concealed carry permit in Los Angeles right now. Things were not that bad in Washington, D.C., but it was still about 4 months just to file your application to get a carry permit. Earlier this year, as part of an executive order to make D.C. safe again, there was this working group that was established, a task force. It was supposed to, among other things, look at ways to speed up the process of applying for and receiving a concealed carry permit in D.C. And last week, the White House announced that the wait time has basically gone from 4 months to 4 days, Mark, which I think is a very good thing and an indication that, you know, these jurisdictions around the country that are taking a year or more, L.A., New York, right? They can fix this problem anytime they want.
It's intentional. Now, you wouldn't suggest, you're not suggesting, are you, that California is taking a year intentionally to do that, are you? I mean, clearly it takes them that long to process the paperwork, right? No, we all know what's going on. All kidding aside, you know, the D.C. thing to me is interesting for a number of reasons. Let's get this caveat out right now. no one should have to go through this process that anybody has to go through in Washington, D.C., period, to carry a gun. We are in a day and age of constitutional carry. North Carolina hopefully will be 30th. I understand one of those two Republicans flipped. Now there's one left. Now, I don't know that that one Republican wants to be the outlier that every pro-gun group is going to want to attack at this point forward. So things might be looking good in North Carolina. But getting to D.C., 4.5 months to 4 days, I'll take that, as I said last night on my show, I'll take that as a victory. Because it is. It's a step forward in the system, in the bureaucracy that is currently in place. Our ultimate goal is to wipe out that bureaucracy, right? But let's, the key word here with that process in Washington is that wait also includes the registration of the firearm that you're going to carry in addition to the carry permit itself.
Mm-hmm.
So if we ever hear that background checks and all this lead to registration, we all know what registration leads to eventually. Their ultimate goal is to know where every single gun in the district is. And they have no business knowing that. Now, something else interesting, isn't D.C., isn't the District of Columbia, I'm an American citizen, that's federal area, right? Shouldn't I be able to carry there? If I go visit what my tax dollars are paying for,
right? Yeah.
Is, I mean, what is for me? Look, this whole thing is a mess. We just need to get rid of it, but at least it's a step. It's just a small step in the right direction, but I'll take it for now.
I will take it too. And you're right. And one of the things that the task force, I guess, said is that they are working on reciprocity. But that's going to take a vote by the DC City Council, which isn't going to happen, right? So, you've got a couple of options, right? Congress could flex its muscle and you know, wrest control of the district's gun laws away from the D.C. City Council. Probably wouldn't be just the gun laws. I mean, you'd see Congress take a much more active role in the day-to-day governance of D.C. And I honestly, like, just on a 50,000-foot level, I have mixed feelings about that.
I do, too.
But...
Well, you know, well, no, let's tackle that for a second, because you bring up a great point. Let's look at a future administration down the road. Now, the Democrats are not doing themselves any favors at this stage of the game. They have no leaders. You know, I can honestly make this statement that if the Democrats stay on the path they're on, we won't see a Democrat in the White House for at least three more terms. They've got a lot of problems in that party to fix. Americans love what Trump is doing. And when he cleans that city, I mean, he's just got them on their heels. They're all on the side now. The Democrats are on the side of illegals invading, graffiti, ghettos. None of this should happen in American cities, and Trump is going to fix that problem in D.C. Now, again, having said that, you know, a future administration, do you really want the federal government? At some point, there's going to be a Democrat in the White House again, and do you want the federal government in charge of that? No, I don't.
Yeah. Yeah.
All right. And I know you don't either. So,
yeah. Well, you know, and the other aspect of this is, and we've actually, you know, seen some of this. I mean, it has been a while since I've been to D.C. I'm actually going to be up in Northern Virginia next weekend, and I might actually go over to the district for the first time in about a year just to see, you know, how different it is since the last time I was there. But, you know, Representative Thomas Massey, some Second Amendment groups have pushed back against the Trump administration for kind of touting these, not just kind of, but for touting the arrest of people who are simply carrying without a permit. Mm-hmm. Right. And I think that is. That's problematic, too. I mean, I understand that there are limits to what this task force can do. There are limits to what the White House can do. But, you know, cleaning up D.C. is great. Strictly enforcing D.C.'s gun control laws as part of that cleanup, not okay. So great, right?
Well, there were 11. I took a dive into that last night.
Yeah.
There's a double-edged sword here, and there's a lot of nuance going on because GOA has made statements, as others have, National Association of Gun Rights, who's been, I got to hand it to them, they've been doing a great job in the courts as well as of late, have also made statements that we should, you know, cops should not be arresting people simply for violating the permit law, all right? Now, there were 11 arrests that most of the people, the GOA statement was based on these 11 arrests that were made public. Six of those arrests involved drug crimes, all right? There was only one that we know of that I'm aware of at this point that was strictly for carrying a firearm without a permit.
Mm-hmm.
But I do not know that person's, you know, background. We got to be really careful with that. While they're absolutely correct, and I absolutely agree 100%, it should, you know, any officer that has discretion in the district, if you or I, you know, look, they've invited this type of behavior with the draconian laws that they've had in the city. The problem is it is the law.
Mm-hmm.
The cops are going to enforce that law. Now, what a lot of people don't like, and I'm not speaking for GOA here, but I just have a gut feeling that they don't like shirts emblazoned with ATF police walking around the district either, because we all know the history of the ATF. So again, an interesting scenario unfolding in DC. There's a lot of officer discrepancy or discretion involved here.
Yeah.
And I hope they just make the right decision. But guys, we have to be fair. We don't know the underlying root cause of a lot of this.
Right. You're right. I mean, there is where we're going on media reporting, which is, A, sensationalistic, B, sometimes inaccurate, and C, oftentimes incomplete. Right. Although I would say, too, from a libertarian perspective, from a pure freedom perspective, I don't have a problem with people who smoke pot owning guns, even though that, too, is a federal law. Right. So so if that's what it is, like, oh, we caught you with a personal amount of weed and a gun and we're going to charge you with a federal felony. But again, that's a different issue. The Trump administration is actually actively defending 922G3, which is a subject of another conversation, because there are going to be several cases dealing with that pending before the Supreme Court this fall, too.
I do have to say this because I can hear people yelling at me right now about my position. And it's not a position. I'm just throwing out what is.
Yeah.
That is the law in D.C., whether we like it or not.
It is.
Okay. So you know when you go in that there's a risk that you're taking because you're violating the law. We're not talking about a job thing here where your employer says you can't carry a gun in your truck and you lose your job. We're talking about it is a D.C. law that they can lock you up for. So guys, be careful about that. And what you were just talking about with pot, with weed and firearms, et cetera. I absolutely agree with you wholeheartedly, but I warn people all the time. If you've got a medical marijuana card in the state of Florida and you buy a gun and you lie on that form, I don't care whether I agree with it or not. That's a violation of federal law and you can be charged. So act accordingly. The goal here is to change these laws. That's what we have to do, because I agree with you wholeheartedly, 100%. Guy wants to sit around the house and smoke weed or drink. I don't care what they do. Okay. Makes no difference to me. But it's on the form and you're answering it and you're like, see, that's where we have the problem. You know, that you get into defy it and not comply and all that. Fine. I get it.
Yeah. Yeah. Well,
I don't smoke weed, so it's not a problem for me, but it is a problem for millions of Americans.
It is, particularly those, I would say, with, medical marijuana licenses, those who use it for, not necessarily recreational drugs, although I'm kind of with you, like, fine, if that's what you do instead of drinking or in addition to drinking, fine, just be responsible. Don't be a jackass. But I looking specifically at the medical marijuana issue, that to me is something, where. Again, I mean, my wife went through chemotherapy, multiple times. There were times where she could not, she had no appetite. She was throwing up, every time she even thought about eating. And we got recommendations all the time. Hey, you know what? You know, should you have an edible? You should try this. You should try that. It's like, well, can't really introduce that into our situation, right? I mean, that was the last thing I wanted, the ATF coming to my door.
Right.
So that's an issue that I think. And ultimately, I mean, that's an issue. The courts could resolve. Congress could resolve it. President Trump's actually looking at rescheduling marijuana as like Schedule 3. That would at least allow it to be medically prescribed. That would help. So there are things that can be done and hopefully will be done in terms of that in the future. But
it's interesting.
It is. Absolutely. We do live in interesting times. And Mark, I appreciate I always appreciate the Mondays with Mark. So thank you for coming on the program today.
Thank you for having me. Appreciate it.
Absolutely. I hope you get to feeling better. And let's maybe plan on doing this again next Monday, too.
Let's do it. And the cup of coffee made me feel a lot better. Sundays are just late nights, brother. So I appreciate it.
Thanks. Absolutely, man. We'll talk to you soon. And of course, you can check out Mark every day except for. What's the Saturdays. One day you're not on the air? Except for Saturday.
Saturday is my one day off, and it never works that way anyway. So,
well, check out Mark Walters on Armed American Radio, The Daily Defense, The Sunday Monster Show. And Mark, thank you again for coming on Cam and Company today.
Thanks, Cam. Appreciate it. Have a great day.
My thanks once again to Mark for joining us on the program, and looking forward to having him back again next Monday. All right, let's turn our attention now to today's Armed Citizen story, our good deed of the day, and our recidivist report will start there with a story from the New York Post. Thug, who's terrorized New York City since he was 14, still getting breaks thanks to Raise the Age Law. Lloyd Francis, the paper says, first busted at age 14. He's now been arrested a half dozen times on attempted murder, robbery, assault, felony gun possession charges. Yet, As the Post writes, before being convicted of a sixth serious crime last month, Francis, a suspected member of the local town Savages Only gang, had served a total of about 2 years behind bars because of his because of the Empire State's lax juvenile justice statutes, according to our records and sources. About half of his arrests have been sealed, too, because they happened when he was a juvenile, meaning that the details and dispositions are kept from public scrutiny. The Post says that Francis was finally hit with a 10-year prison term after being convicted of his second attempted murder charge earlier this year. But even then, they know that is like a little more than one-third of the 25 years that he could have received if he had not been considered a juvenile in the earlier cases. A law enforcement source, Mario the Rooster is equally disgusted by this, says he has a criminal history of somebody three times his age before he's even 21. Are we trying to rehabilitate or walk them off the side of a cliff? He says there's no hope for this kid. If you're picking up your first attempted murder at 14 and you're doing 10 years for your second at 19, you're on your way to life. The Post says that the New York statute, which was implemented in two stages in 2017 and 2018, raised the age of criminal responsibility in New York to 18 and allowed defendants as old as 21 to be held at juvenile facilities. Before that, suspects as young as 16 could be tried in adult criminal court automatically. But after they raised the age law, lawmakers in Albany also adopted measures that prohibited judges from setting bail on nearly all criminal cases, except for the most violent felonies. And most crimes remain ineligible for bail at this point. So you can get arrested for a wide variety of violent offenses. And no matter what your age, you're going to be allowed to bond out. And again, if you are under the age of 18 or even between the ages of 18 and 21, I will say there's some consistency here because, you know, New York treats 18, 19, 20 year olds as juveniles, basically, when it comes to exercising their Second Amendment rights. So they treat them like juveniles in the criminal justice system, too. I think it's wrong on both counts. If you're 18, you're a legal adult. You should be treated as a legal adult. And that's not happening here. The Post says that Francis has benefited from the statute since his first arrest in 2019, when at the age of 14, he was charged with attempted murder for a stabbing on Staten Island. He was convicted. He served just over a year behind bars for attempted murder. Then later charged with felony gun possession in a separate case. He was able to plead down to attempted weapons possession and got another year in a juvenile facility, which, frankly, I'm surprised that he got a year for possession of a firearm. Although adults possessing a firearm without a license in New York are eligible for 3.5 years in prison. Once he was back in the streets, at least two more sealed arrests, according to the Post. He was charged with second-degree criminal possession of a weapon, but released because the charge is not eligible for bail under the state's criminal justice reforms. While that case was still pending, he also shot a man in the chest at a local park and was convicted of his second attempted murder rap. This is the one that led to the 10-year prison sentence. As the Post says, both the weapons charge and the second attempted murder charge could have put him away for up to 25 years. But the district attorney's office prosecuted the gun case in the youth part of Supreme Court, which would count towards his record and make him a predicate felon if he's busted again. But his lawyers appealed the gun prosecution and actually won with the appellate division court, saying that the facts of the gun case did not meet the, quote, extraordinary circumstances that legislators require to keep the case out of the more lenient family court. So you got to, I mean, again, think about this for a second. And a guy, I'm about as libertarian as it comes when it comes to gun laws. But you got somebody who at that point had already been convicted of attempted murder. Right. So they're a felon. They're not allowed to possess a firearm, even if they're legally old enough to do so. And it sounds like he wasn't legally old enough to do so. Caught with a gun as a convicted felon and as a juvenile. And the state says, well, I mean, it doesn't really matter that he had that attempted murder charge in the past. It doesn't matter that he stabbed somebody. Because possession of a firearm alone does not meet the level of taking this guy and moving his case to adult court instead of family court, where, again, these sentences are going to be much more lenient. Now, again, if New York law treated possession of a firearm with leniency to begin with, okay, fine. That's the uniform standard. I wouldn't have a problem with that. But that's not the standard. Possession of a firearm without a license is considered a violent felony in New York if you're an adult. And again, you're eligible for 3.5 years behind bars. In fact, I think it's supposed to be a mandatory minimum of 3.5 years behind bars. But again, if you're a juvenile or even a young adult, that apparently does not apply. All right, on to today's armed citizen story from another anti-gun state, Illinois, where a Joliet woman fatally shot an intruder during an apparent home invasion. She was protecting not only herself, but her child. This happened on Friday night, about 10:30 in the evening. Police got a call to investigate reports of a home invasion. When they arrived, they found signs of forced entry at the home. They went inside. They found a man on the second floor of the home who had been shot. Paramedics arrived, pronounced the man dead at the scene. Detectives searched the home. They found a woman and her infant child in a bedroom. The woman was found with a handgun. Authorities determined that she lived at the home. The woman grabbed a gun and hid with her child in a bedroom closet after she heard somebody forcing her way inside the home. And she stayed there, hunkered down with her kid. They believe that when the man entered the bedroom and maybe even opened the closet door, that's when the woman fired in self-defense. Police said the suspect was found wearing gloves, had a screwdriver at the time of the incident. Apparently random. They didn't know each other, according to authorities. Incident remains under investigation. Police say the woman is fully cooperating with detectives. I hope to God she had a firearms owner ID card. I don't think one should be necessary to keep a gun in your home, but that is the law in Illinois. And I would hate to see this woman face any charges for protecting herself and her child because she didn't possess a gun without the proper paperwork. So we will keep our eyes open for any more details on that story. But again, a woman and her child alive today because she had the means to protect them both. And finally, today in the right place at the right time, willing and able to do the right thing, a good deed out of Colorado, the Lake Pueblo area of Colorado, where a good Samaritan was on hand to rescue a kid who got swept out in the middle of the lake. I don't have the video for you, but I can show you a image here from the rescue. And apparently this kid was out like several hundred yards from shore. KRDO reports that Joseph Chacon says he was fishing with a friend when he noticed a kid, again, drifting away in the middle of the lake. Moments later, he said he heard the boy scream for help. He said once he jumped off the floaty, he screamed, "Help!" And that's when I decided I just grabbed my life jacket, head in there, because I didn't see anybody else going in yet. So I just went in myself. Now, the boy was wearing a life jacket, thankfully. But another man out on shore, presumably the boy's father, tried to go out to save him, was not wearing a life jacket, was really struggling to reach the boy, so he could not do so. Chacon, though, was able to reach the child and bring him back safely to shore. Don't know the outcome. I mean, it sounds like the kid was safe, didn't even have to be taken to the hospital for a checkup, so... you know, kudos to dad for at least putting his kid in a life jacket. But kudos to Joseph Chacon for making sure that that kid did make it back safely to his parents in the right place at the right time and willing and able to do the right thing to help a child in need. All right. That is going to do it for this edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. Want to thank you as always for being a part of the program. And if you like what you see, I would encourage you to head over to BearingArms.com. We're keeping you abreast of all of the latest Second Amendment news and information from all across the nation, even beyond our borders. Occasionally, I had a story over the weekend about Canada's liberals finding it much more difficult to actually go get the guns that they said they were going to round up than proclaiming that they were going to round them up in the first place. Anyway, check it out, BearingArms.com. We are keeping you up to date on everything that's going on with your right to keep and bear arms. We'll see you back here tomorrow for another edition of Bearing Arms, Cam & Company. And in the meantime, be well, be safe, and be free.